I'm Tom. That guy over there is Figure Four Weekly indie wrestling news reporter Mike Falcone. And we are joined by Free Admissions, Ben Turpin. I was thinking of Ben Pasco, and I was stopping myself, but you're both Ben. Yeah, that was an awkward intro, but we're going with it. We're going with it. We're good.
And we're happy Ben's on the show. What's up?
Oh, I was just going to say, you're F4W's indie reporter now. I was unaware.
Yeah, I am. I don't know if I didn't know if Tom knew this. You know, I was even unaware of it until about 3 days ago when I got an email from Brian Alvarez asking if I'd report on the indie news. So, unfortunately, there was no indie news this week. A couple weeks ago, I reported the indie news about, I think it was like Dick Togo's having his retirement match.
Which is funny, like, because like a day before it was announced that he was going to PWG.
Yeah, and what happened was I had sent that to Brian on like that Monday, and he had printed it or mailed, you know, put it on the website on Wednesday, and PWG kind of announced that like on like what, late Monday night, so everyone was finding out Tuesday. So yeah, I looked like a douche like the first week, but yeah, that's one of my gigs now. And I'm also gonna be writing, believe it or not, for Fighting Spirit magazine, which is pretty interesting. I'm gonna be covering the Chikara and Dragon Gate Sunday shows for their magazine, which is pretty weird.
I think
pretty awesome though. Good for you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm kind of, it was weird getting these emails, you know, and Tom bringing them up here. So yeah, but thank you though.
I'm thinking I'm the only person that's been on the show that hasn't written for Fighting Spirit at this point. Like, I'm pretty sure we did an episode with Lance Storm now at some point.
Yeah, we did. Like, because it's not the 50th show, and we're happy to have you on, Ben. You're the big 50th guest. Really wasn't planned that way, but I guess that's how it's gonna work out. So it's cool though.
I saw that on Twitter, and I was like, I'm not sure if I can hold up to the gold anniversary of Mike and Tom Present.
No, it's cool, man.
Just get drunk and like take your pants off and say something really racist, and we're all good.
Yeah.
I'm sure that would be very appropriate where I am right now, but
yeah right. Considering where you are.
Well,
but
what's wrestling. Up, Delta? It's wrestling. People get drunk at airports. But no, Peterson Cup happened Saturday, or Friday and Saturday rather, and it sounds like a kicking good time. Everyone that's I've heard that's gone said it's like amazing. So
I listened to before, because Ben, I mean, we haven't let you talk much, I'm sure, because you're probably gonna be there's a lot for you to talk about. I listened to the Free Admission FR podcast, which you go and listen to. It's Ben's show. I guess Ben wasn't on it because, like, what do you guys have, like a rotating set of guests, and it's like almost like a 3-hour podcast, believe it or not. I listened to it at work. I had it split it up before and after lunch, but it was really good. Yeah, I should have just listened to it all in one shot and just been a trooper, but I didn't. But no, there's so much to talk about, so that's why we want to have you on the show, just like kind of like that live experience. And I guess we'll just start with night one. What your general thoughts on it? And I mean, we're not going to run down every match, but like there's a few things I have to ask you about. And Tom, if you have the results that we can ask him about, so go ahead, buddy.
Right. I'll say that maybe I'm not calling it like one of the greatest shows ever, which was certainly mentioned on that podcast. But you know, you have 15 tournament matches, 16 if you consider the match to get back into the tournament, because Lindsay, who won on night one, couldn't make it for night two due to a family emergency. Actually, his wife gave birth on Thursday, so I guess we were lucky just to get him on Friday. But, you know, you come in and you have a certain expectation for a lot of the matches. And in most cases, I had no expectation. But then, you know, you see Fish and Gresham, Silver Gargano, and then some of the later tournament matches you expect to be very good. And just every match absolutely surpassed expectation. And then the matches where you had no expectation, well, in some cases, they stole the show. Like on this show, Fox and Jake Manning. And here's what I'll say, because I know you guys are going to ask me about some of the matches, but this show, or the two shows, the tournament in general, every match went out there with the intention of stealing the show. And that's just not something that happens that often anymore. I mean, between Evolve, Dragon Gate USA, ROH, Chikara, it's really about pacing the shows. You know, we don't want to burn out the crowd. You know, and in this case, you know, everybody went out there with something to prove, and it's about, you know, maybe the first half's a little slower, and then, you know, we go bang, bang, bang into the second half. And even, you know, the only promotion that really has an advantage to doing that is PWG, because they run once a month, sometimes twice, so they can just put on super shows. But Dragon Gate even has that kind of formula, Evolve as well, because they don't run that often. but it still feels like it's always about pacing. So maybe somebody underneath has to slow down a little bit. And in most cases, there'll be a match maybe on, you know, those shows that I'm really looking forward to, and it'll kind of get shortchanged on time. And then something later in the show that maybe I'm not looking forward to, you know, we'll get more time. And I'm, you know, as a DVD buyer and pay-per-view buyer, I'm going to be disappointed with that. But, you know, so every match surpassed expectation. And that goes without saying, of course, that I like a tight and snug show, but I think it's appropriate every once in a while to have shows like this where every match just goes out there and tries to steal the show, and they exceeded. And then, you know, for every, you know, night one was very good. And then, but just for everything to have to try to top one or the other, and it felt like that was a continuation through the two shows. And then the finals, which was just absolutely ridiculous.
Now let's start the scene one, the opening match on night one. Let's just talk about the scene in general, because I don't think we've talked about them a lot in the show. But they're, I guess they're Gabe Sapolsky's new pet project. They're his new shiny toy, so to speak. How'd they look? Because I know the Midwest shots. They really just did a couple short matches, and then in Milwaukee, which I got to see, they had a pretty decent little match of Ronan. But yeah, how's that act coming along? Because now they've gotten a few shows to get their groove together, because I know Scott Reed and Caleb Conley they're not from the same region. They had barely worked around each other up until they got thrown in that team with Larry Dallas. Yeah. How's that act coming together?
Well, I'll say that I've always been impressed with Caleb Conley. Scott Reed I've only seen in multi-man matches, whether it be in Evolve or Dragon Gate USA. Mm-hmm. And Larry Dallas, I thought what they did on Evolve 7 was way too much with Larry Dallas. And I thought it brought, on a show that was fantastic, I thought it brought it to a screeching halt, just because I think you have to use Larry Dallas in moderation and not.
Oh yeah, I agree.
A major point. Yeah. And I was kind of sold on him this weekend, just, you know, and it's a lot different when you're there live and you interact a little bit with him. But as far as the matches, the Dark City Fight Club match was actually probably the weakest match on night one. That's not to say that it was a bad match, and that goes saying, you know, the entire tournament. There just wasn't a bad match. So this was the weakest match on night one, and they really didn't get a lot of time. And then they played in with Pinky to Dragon Gate USA with that, and John Davis, and that played into the finish, which I was fine with, that they did a screwy finish and did the title switch, because when you have a show with all clean finishes, you know, and it made a lot of sense. And then on the second night, they did a 2-on-3 match with Dark City and Pinky Sanchez and The Scene. And it was a fun match. Again, it was probably one of the weaker matches of the night. And I feel like I still haven't gotten a real good grasp. But again, I'm sold on Caleb Conley. I've seen a lot of his singles work, and he's just really solid. And he's not even that long into the business. Him and Cedric Alexander, I kind of put in the same category. Yeah. I'm very impressed with both of them. But Scott Reed, I can't say that I've seen particularly enough to, you know, for a good judgment.
Now, looking ahead a little bit into the card, it's looking into the card. Or let's just go to the first match, because I wanted to bring up Lewis Linden, because he's a dude I don't think gets nearly enough hype. Because you got Flip, who's out there doing all the stuff, and then you got Lewis, who has developed into, my opinion, a much more solid all-around wrestler.
Yeah.
I saw, I don't know if either of you guys have gotten to see the, I think it's the April IPW show, where him and Marion Fontaine had this, lovely little 10-minute match that I'm just absolutely in love with. And I'm glad Marion got the Chikara shot. But no, Linden, I think, is a dude who a lot more people should be using. Yeah, we're not going to run down match by match, but ironically, I do want to talk about the match after the Rumble. Lindsay and Linden, how'd that go?
I would even want to know. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ben.
Oh, it's fine. I was just going to say, actually, it was probably, and this goes without saying again, it was not a bad match in the tournament. This was probably the weakest match of the tournament, but it was a good match. I'm a big fan of Lindsay. As far as Linden, I haven't seen a lot again. I haven't seen a lot of those Midwest guys, because when I do see them, whether it be in Evolve or Dragon Gate USA, they're always in multi-band matches. So I feel like it's not really fair, you know.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about Lindsay, just like Tom wanted to ask you about Lewis Linden, because Lindsay, ever since, I guess, leaving Chikara, you know, you don't really see him a lot. I think he was made a very brief Dragon Gate appearance, I guess, around that Mania weekend. But besides that, you don't really see Lindsay. So
he's based in Florida now. He has a family. He has a job. He's a guy that, what I find interesting about Lindsay is that somebody has to pull out of the Evolve show. I don't remember who it was, but I think it was Shima, who had a scheduling conflict because of TNA, or maybe he had to stay in Puerto Rico. And then Lindsay got booked. And it's like, yeah. Why does it take the replacement to get him booked? Because I'm a big supporter of Lindsay, and I would love to see him booked more. But, you know,
yeah, that's
all those
right.
kind mm-hmm. of based, you know, in Florida. But it's always yeah. a pleasure to see him. And, I mean, I haven't seen him work in so long other than a Evolve match, and he's always, you know, he's just as good or if not better.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember it was weird, like, for, like, Evolve 9, and he just got, like, put in the match, like, out of the blue. So that was right. weird.
Yeah, which, you know, like I said, I mean, why it takes a replacement to get Lindsay booked kind of blows my mind, because I see him as one of those, like, guys that's just not used for whatever reason. But, again, he has a lot going on for himself, yeah. and, you know, it's understood.
And I guess you want to talk about another guy you don't really see booked a lot is Bobby Fish. And I guess leading
you
into that
match. Is he from Florida? I think he is.
Fish?
New York.
Yeah, Fish is from, like, the New York-ish area.
Okay.
Because he used to ride into IWA shows with, like...
NYWC?
No. No, those are, like... Yeah, it's, like, almost like exclusively Silver. Mikey Whipwreck kids. Yeah, that's, yeah. like, Silver and that dude that I mixed
Papa
up. Yeah.
Also in the tournament.
But, no, but, yeah, Bobby Fish, like, you don't really see him a lot, and I really enjoy his matches in Evolve, like, when he wrestles in Evolve, right. and I don't think he wrestles in Dragon Gate, because I think he works over in Japan a lot, so I think that kind of conflicts promotion, so I think that's why Gabe doesn't book him on those shows, but he was on this show, and he wrestled John Gresham, and I heard they tore it up, and this is a really intriguing match, so how is this one?
Yeah, you got everything that you would expect from Bobby Fish in this match. Look, don't get me wrong, I was more than impressed with Bobby Fish, and he had great matches. He had three matches on the weekend, and each of them was very good. Gresham is just, like, so good. And this match in particular is, like, so unique, because where else are you going to see Bobby Fish and Jonathan Gresham for 15 minutes? It's never going to happen. And it was very methodical and technical, and then, you know, in the last 5 minutes, you know, they tore it up, you know, and were really hitting each other. But John Gresham in particular, just because I don't get to see him have these types of matches ever, you know, because he's either under a mask in Chikara or he's in CZW working the undercard where maybe he doesn't get to, you know, he's never going to get to work this type of match. So, yeah, this was probably the best match of night one with Silver and Gargano, but there was another particular match that actually stole the show, at least for me. But, yeah, I mean, Fish and Gresham, like, again, I come in with an expectation of this is going to be very good, and it exceeded it. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think the deal with Bobby Fish is he got hot because of the Evolve shows early on, and he was going to be like a main player there, and then the Evolve shows stopped happening as sporadically, and yeah. then like he's still like whenever an Evolve show pops up, yeah, he's a top guy there. It's just a matter of he came out of nowhere, almost I don't want to say flash in the pan, but it's kind of what happened.
When was the last time he worked Evolve?
The last iPay-per-view. Yeah,
he
did
the last one. I don't even.
Yeah,
remember.
Yeah, he did a deal with Kevin Steen, and then.
Oh yes, of course, yeah. with John Davis. That was a really fun match, by the way.
Yeah, but. Totally. But I did want to throw in there real quick. John Gresham, you mentioned you don't get to see him have a lot of these matches. He's in Europe a lot, so like you don't really get to see him on a lot of American indies as of late.
Yeah, and he's actually from Atlanta, which when I learned that surprised me because I'm from Atlanta and I just like never knew that. And he's like he actually. Doesn't travel, but he hangs out with like AR Fox and UA Nation, who we'll talk about. And he was actually in UHA, I speak of, was actually on the Dragon Gate triple shot recently.
Yeah, which I'm psyched because they're all coming in Indianapolis this weekend. And John Gresham's, I think John Gresham is only on the CZW half, but I think the other two are on both shows, including good old UHA Nation wrestling AR Fox at CZW, which I'm psyched as heck about.
Oh yeah, that is this week, and I even forgot about that.
Yeah, it's
yeah. I've probably seen that match half a dozen times in this area, and you won't be disappointed.
Oh yeah,
I've seen UHA Nation.
Sure, it'll all be there. You know.
Yeah, it'll. I've seen those guys multiple times in the past month because after the Dragon Gate triple shot, they all came in for IPW, like 3 weeks later, and. The longest show of my life, but it was a good show. I'm just saying it went about 3 weeks, but
yeah, well, it wasn't PCW.
No.
And you probably won't get that reference, but some people will.
I get it.
Yeah. Platinum Championship Wrestling, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Same.
I was going to say, if we still have enough time, I wanted to get you to talk about that for a minute, but, we focus on the positive here.
Absolutely. And there was plenty of positives in this tournament, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. A.R. Fox, and speaking of A.R. Fox, A.R. Fox and the Man Scout, Jake Manning. Yeah. Jake Manning, I guess a lot of people may know Jake Manning as the guy who holds the camera at the ROH shows, or the high spots guy.
The $5 yeah. wrestling guy.
$5 wrestling guy, yeah. And I know he works the NEW shows, like those promotions that do like Jerry the King Lawler versus Terry Funk in a match, and then like Tommy Dreamer versus what the hell, the guy who took out George Emil Steele. Like he'll wrestle.
As we lose Mike, that happens sometimes on the show. But yeah, I wanted to jump in real quick and say, like, I've heard a lot of really good things about this AR Fox Drake Manning match, which I would almost think yeah. a clash of styles, because Manning a lot of places works. I'm like a very athletic version of an old school style, a lot of shtick, a lot of, oh, I have my scout book, yada yada. But it sounds like he stepped up his game tenfold with AR Fox.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you would know him as like the ROH camera guy or the $5 wrestling guy or just the guy that plays the Boy Scout, but as a man character. That was definitely put on the back burner for this match, and they came with something to prove. Jake, in particular, and we'll talk about AR because he was so impressive in this tournament. And there's a trend here where there's so many people in this tournament that were impressive that, like, there's so many people that could have been the MVPs of this weekend. But this match, just like, how can you have an expectation for Jake Manning versus AR Fox? As you said, a very random styles clash. And ultimately, you know, Jake Manning came with his working boots on. And, you know, the only times I've seen Jake, he was in a Ring of Honor six man, you know, and of course it was all character. I've seen him on a couple of random, you know, just wherever I could find it on like YouTube or I probably shouldn't say that. But, anyways. This match, I mean, he came out with the best moonsault ever. He came out with a no-hands airplane spin mixed with AR Fox, and it was just, you know, just totally blew me away because, you know, again, I had no expectation. And, I mean, it's I'll say this, not so much for the work in this match, but the fact that Jake Manning, like that Shikara hasn't snatched this guy up or isn't using him or that he isn't used other places, even if it's just for the character, let alone what I saw from this match, it's kind of mind-blowing.
I think that's more of a case of he goes where High Spots goes. So if, let's say High Spots, actually High Spots was at the New York Shikara show, I thought. So I don't know why he wasn't used there unless they had something else going on. But yeah, most of the time,
and when they were in Burlington in Tennessee, High Spots was there. Nowhere to be found, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's weird. But yeah, usually wherever you see a High Spots merchandise table, Jake Manning's running around somewhere. So that's probably the reason why he's not working more places, though the fact that he's doing a lot of ROH shows and just running around with the cameras kind of weird.
And it's too bad that him himself isn't actually the one editing the ROH footage, but that's another, you know.
Yeah, right? That's a whole nother show. I'm interested in finding out. I'm sure I cut off there, obviously, Tim, and you're going to leave that in the show, so we can...
I think I got in there smoothly enough to where, like, it'd be awkward to cut it out. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was really interested in finding out about that match, and real quick, not to backtrack too much, but just to kind of just being that we just kind of skip past them, and if you have anything to say about them real quick, not to say they weren't good if you don't have anything to say, but... Yeah, Jarrell Clark beating Aaron Epic, Mike Cruz beating Pinky Sanchez.
And I think Mike just, cut out, but anyway.
Okay, I'll say about Pinky Sanchez is I haven't totally been sold on him. I haven't seen a lot of his work either. Like, the John Davis match that was on the iPay-per-view was just, like, not good, and there was a lot of problems with it. He's a very fun character, very smart character, so I can appreciate that. And I feel like the more I see him, like, the more I've kind of started to like him. Jarrell Clark... he's another story of this tournament because this actually, it came out after, you know, when he came out after the tournament and made a speech, this is going to be his retirement. You know, these were his last two matches and arguably the best two Jarrell Clark matches I've ever seen. And I mean, this is a guy who I haven't seen in 2 years. So for him to show up and then put on this caliber of performance, which were two very good matches, I mean, I was just, you know, super impressed. You know, I there's another guy I want to mention, Mike Cruz, although I think that's later in the tournament. But Mike Cruz, another MVP of the tournament, but we can talk about him on the second night.
And I wanted to bring up Aaron Epic. Is he a Florida guy?
He is a Florida guy.
Okay. I was wondering because he was at IPW, And I was thinking like he was a Beyond Wrestling guy or something, because I think he worked those shows. But then I read somewhere he was a Florida guy, and I'm like,
how the heck did he get an Orlando guy?
Yeah, I'm thinking, because like the WWA 4 car was like completely full for that show, for the best of my knowledge, because there were like six of those guys on the show. So I was wondering how the heck he got to IPW. But yeah, that's nuts. And,
you know, speaking of the Florida guys, just in general, that, you know, the only one that got a run was Mike Cruz, and that was probably the smartest thing, because ultimately he looked fantastic. And I mean, if enough people see this, the guy should become a star from these shows, at least on the independent level. But just, you know, everyone stepped up. And like, if FIP was to run regularly, I think they really have something here based just on these shows with the Florida guys that lost in the first round. You know, does that make sense? You know, and then you bring down a few Georgia guys. And I mean, I think you have a good base and a good talent there, and people will want to see those shows, but I don't expect FIP to be running, you know, regularly anytime soon, unfortunately.
It's a shame that more places aren't like that. Like, I wish, like it's nice that IPW here is running the super shows and such, but there are more than enough really tremendous Indiana, Illinois, Ohio guys to run that, and then bring in, like you said, a car of Georgia guys. And the same could be said for, you know, Florida. Same could be said for a lot of places. It's just everyone wants the super show, and the problem is when everyone's doing the super show, nobody's buying the DVDs of anywhere because it's whitewash, you know. Right. So, we were talking about Jake Manning earlier. I wanted to bring up this segment because it sounds like it's about the best darn thing ever. Because I love the Ultimate Warrior Honky Tonk Man style deal where you bring in the big baby face monster. He debuts, beats a guy quick. Oh my goodness, this guy's made a huge impact. I love whenever anybody does that. And this sounds like something very similar. So if you wanted to go into that here.
Yeah, there was some added kind of attention and excitement behind this, because we actually found out that U-Haul was coming with AR, because I guess he posted it on Facebook or Twitter the Friday, like, morning. So we were really excited about the prospect that, you know, he would be on these shows. And then he wasn't used night one, so we were really hoping. And we heard, you know, some rumblings that he would actually be in this, what was the 2-on-3 match, might be 3-on-3. That was just kind of, a rumor, so to speak. But, when they did this, I mean, we had come to the conclusion that it was definitely going to be U-Haul. And when he came out, I mean, we pretty much, you know, exited the building in excitement. And I mean, it was perfect. And it just added to, you know, it's perfect to come out from intermission with something like that. But then just the overall quality, because, you know, we had like all these matches where you have guys doing a lot of spots trying to steal the show. And then you have like a squash, essentially. And, you know, Jake Manning, of course, unaware, you know, of what he's getting into, and, you know, U-Haul comes out, it was like a 90-second squash, sorry, and, you know, Jake gets in a couple of chops, he no-sells them, he hits a German suplex, powerbomb, standing shooting star press, which is very impressive, and he won the Florida Heritage title, so.
By the way, is it U-Haul or is it U-Haul? I've heard both, and.
U-Haul, I would imagine, but I could be wrong.
Okay, because they were announcing him at Dragon Gate as U-Haul, and then they continued the trend at IPW, so I didn't know, because it looks like it could go either way. So it was just
yeah.
And I mean, I've heard it varies, you know, just between whoever you talk to. So
yeah. Now Johnny Gargano is another guy who looks like he had one heck of a run, and he's got a lot of momentum. He's got the Yamato match coming up that he seems to be really excited about, and you know, all that jazz. But he's been fantastic lately. And if you wanted
he's really turned a corner since his Dragon Gate tour, which was, I believe, early in the year, late last year. Because I actually used to like not stand Johnny Gargano, like when he was doing the comedy shtick and you know, in Evolve, I was like, get this guy off, you know, off the DVD.
Yeah,
and it was him and
Jacob
on every show or whatever it was. But ever since I saw the match with Jimmy Rave in Atlanta, I was super impressed. And he's just been on a hell of a run since then. I thought him and John Davis from Evolve 7 was just awesome. I love John Davis too, by the way. But and just every match he's been in, it's like stole the show. On these shows in particular, I think he was he was involved in two of the better matches, but he was kind of he wouldn't be at the top of like my MVP list for the weekend. But between him and Silver, him and Gresham, because Gresham played back into the tournament because Lindsay couldn't make it, him and Mike Cruz, which you know, Cruz again was, you know, and if, I guess you'll probably ask me about him because I hyped him up but haven't been able to really talk about him. And then the finals, which was just the best singles match I've ever seen Gargano or Fox in. And I think that says a lot, at least for Gargano.
Yeah, we'll get to that, I guess, toward the end, because obviously AR Fox, or actually, no, we could probably just talk about it now, because I'm looking, we already got into the Uha Nation stuff. AR Fox had a hell of a run, and I guess he ended up winning the cup. And let's see, I think we already covered the first night, but on this night, he wrestled Flip Kendrick, Bobby Fish, and Johnny Gargano, who are three different style wrestlers. So I guess, how was his night two?
Well, and, you know, it was made the point on the Free Admission podcast by Mark Olers, but AR Fox got the best singles match out of maybe of all those guys. And, you know, Bobby Fish and Gargano, that says a lot for those guys because they've had very good singles matches. But in the case of Man Scout and then Flip Kendrick, I mean, those may be the best four singles matches that I've seen from those guys. But then, like, each AR Fox match topped each other, so it was quite incredible. And that's just what added to, like, the overall kind of aura that the show, that we've kind of created about the show. And, of course, we're pushing the show tremendously because we do want to see it on DVD, and we do want people to be able to see what was a great two nights of wrestling. But the Flip Kendrick match, you know, we talked about the Man Scout one. The Flip Kendrick match was the Evolved 7 Rich Swann match with double the time and double the awesomeness. And everybody loved that match, you know, because it was like a 6.5-minute sprint. And this is like, you know, this was a very heavily spot-oriented match. And something I should have mentioned earlier, but it's added to the show, is that, like, you know, when every match is trying to steal the show and you're doing high spot, but there's a lot of work in between, don't get me wrong. It just wasn't, you know, a total two-night spot fest. You're bound to mess up something. There was just never a blown spot in any match.
Wow.
This match was just, you know, one guy trying to top the other. And then him and Bobby Fish to the top rope Falcon Arrow, just to kind of give you an idea of what these guys were doing. And then him and Gargano was just, you know, it was one of those matches, like, they did way too much. They shouldn't have kicked out of half the stuff that they kicked out of. But ultimately, as long as the crowd continues to get into every near fall and peaks at the finish, which I think they did here, I don't think they did too much. And there was a spot, this is a spot that I've been waiting to see for a long time. Fox went for a 450 splash, and Johnny Gargano super kicked him midair. He did a German, Gargano did a really quick snap German suplex from the top on Fox. There was a lot of cool, just like reversals, yeah, super kicks galore. And then what's become, I guess, essentially the move of the year at this point with Fox is the Spanish fly, or the springboard Spanish fly flip over, which is, you know, an incredible move. And this match, and another thing I want to mention about the tournament in general is that, you know, usually when you have guys that are going to be working three times in one night, your quarters and semis, or, you know, semis, or, you know, first round semis and finals in some cases in one night tournament, the some of the matches are going to be, you know, snug and tight on time, but that didn't happen here, you know, and they still went out there with the intention of stealing the show, and they went a lot of time in every round. And but yeah, I mean, this was like, I think this was truly AR Fox's outcoming. I mean, he's always been kind of the spot guy. And that's cool, you know, I like spot guys, and he's always been showcased that way, but he really put together, like, you know, and like you said, with different, you know, different styles with different types of guys, and just every match was, you know, arguably the best match. I mean, Johnny Gargano, I mean, that blew away everything, but other than that, you know, so this is AR Fox's coming out party, if people see it, I guess, but, at least for the 180 people over the two nights that were there, it was.
And I guess the big story, well, not maybe the big story, but one of the big stories after the match was Jarrell Clark. And if anybody really, you know, has followed the indies throughout the years, all, you know, kind of remembers Jarrell Clark as, you know, one of these guys that really kind of, you know, first broke out. I mean, obviously I got two guys on the line who know, you know, the old Wildside days and stuff like that. And, you know, Jarrell Clark, I think, was even in Wildside for a while. And, you know, he's been around for a long time, and I guess this was his last two nights in wrestling. I guess he looks like he's gonna be retiring. So, how did that all play out with Jarrell Clark and his retirement?
Yeah, it was pretty emotional. And I mean, I followed Jarrell Clark's career pretty much since it began, and so was like the group that I was with, because I mean, most of the guys I was with are like Florida, Orlando area, you know, like South Florida, Orlando. So they were at like all those TNAs that he worked. So I mean, and that was, you know, what, 5-6 years ago. And they were at all the FIPs, you know, when he was really kind of, you know, trying to insert himself. And I'll say, I wish they had announced ahead of time that it was his retirement, but I can understand why they didn't, because if they had, I would have been way more behind him. And I wish he had hit the 630 at least one more time. And he actually teased it, but ultimately it didn't happen. But, you know, it added to, you know, you know, everything that was represented on these two nights. So, and it was really cool, you know, because, like, I've always been a big fan, so.
Now, yeah, because we're about, I'd say, what, a half hour into this so far. And I had some other things I wanted to bring up as well. So, and again,
yeah,
the free admission podcast, it's, what, 2 hours, 20 minutes of Peterson Cup coverage.
That.
Yeah. So if there's anything we miss, I am more than sure they got it. So, but real quick, just to close this up, let's say, like, AR Fox sounds like he was the MVP of the show. Let's say you had to do a top three, gold, silver, bronze. Who would you give the silver and the bronze to in terms of MVPs of the shows?
Wow. I would have to give, it's so interchangeable, but ultimately I'd have to say AR Fox is the gold, obviously. And then I would probably go with Mike Cruz second. Mike Cruz is a Florida guy, and he was the one Florida
guy. Yeah, do you
want to
talk about
him
for a minute? Yeah.
Yeah, in a tournament where you're going to, you know, generally you're going to give, like, one Florida guy the rub, and he was clearly the right guy to push. And just blew me away and made him, I mean, you know, an opportunity to make yourself, you know, unfortunately, we don't know if these shows are going to be seen, so ultimately, I don't know how much it means, but hopefully, based on buzz, you know, you'll see Mike Cruz around now. You know, maybe you'll see Gabe give him a shot. He certainly deserves it. And I just thought every match he had was really good. The one with Gargano specifically, especially, because, you know, and again, like, when every match had to follow something that was, like, really good, just to top it was incredible. He did this one move in the Gargano match, or it was more of, like, a aerial just display, where he did, like, a springboard on the middle rope from the outside, then he jumps into the middle rope to the top, and then he does, like, some ridiculous flip. I mean, and it was an aerial display, but it was incredible. And I had never seen anything like that, and I felt like I said that about every match on this weekend, that I had never seen it. And that's another thing to say about this tournament is that, you know, the guys that I was with, I mean, we've been pretty much all over the U.S. for wrestling shows. We've been to PWG, or amongst all of us, I've never been to PWG, but all up and down the East Coast for Ring of Honor. We've been to WrestleMania, Chicago, King of Trios. We've been to everything. And it was kind of hard for us to sit there and, like, we would look at each other and we were like, is this really as good as we think it is? And
yeah.
Then we would go talk to, you know, one of our friends that was working the merch table. And he's pretty critical, can be. And he was like, yeah, this is as good as it seems it is. You know, and then we were talking to some of the workers who were very personable over the weekend, and I give them a lot of credit. It was very cool. And they were blown away. And everybody just has, you know, the best things to say about this tournament, which, you know, and I told them. Because, you know, last year's, which is a very good tournament, never got released on DVD. And I told them on night one that the only way we're going to see these on WWN Live or on DVD is if they're so good, they have to put them up. And I think it more than delivered. So if you want to see two, and look, in terms of putting it up against, like, you know, some of the best tournaments ever, at least indie tournaments, I wouldn't argue against putting it up there. I mean, against the better TPIs, against the better Bolas, go right ahead. It deserves it. And when these come out, whether it's on WWN Live or on DVD, hopefully both, because I'd love to have a copy of it on DVD, go out of your way to see it.
Very good. Yeah. This, between this and the 40 minutes of the free admission podcast I've gotten here and all the tweets I've read, this sounds like an insane, insane set of shows. So I think, I hopefully we're raising enough awareness for this thing that, you know, because I know, like Sal's said in the interview with Gabe the other day, you know, they're 3 months behind on production and stuff, but hopefully they can get caught up and this eventually does see the light of day.
Yeah, I can say that Sal was very excited about these shows, and Larry Dallas actually on Twitter kind of hinted that they might be on WWN Live at some point this week.
Good.
But I don't know how much truth there is behind that. We can only hope.
Mm-hmm. I think
because I know that.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, because I just know that because you and I've been talking it seems like a while now about, like, you know, the JPC from last year and everybody raving about that being so great. And right. that still hasn't come out, you know? So it's kind of like, I really hope, you know, these shows come out, you know, by somehow, you know, so.
It would be criminal if it wasn't at least on WWN Live.
Yeah.
But I think that's almost a guarantee at this point, but I can't ever put a guarantee when, you know.
A DVD.
It's those guys, you know.
Now, speaking of DVDs, you were at the Chikara Southern shows, which are out on DVD now. I just recently watched them. First off, the whole the deal in Tennessee with the bottom rope falling off. Like, what the heck? Like, I don't know. I'm rambling at this point.
Yeah. It was certainly the most overact on the show, the bottom rope. Or
I was gonna say, yeah, it was sad because these guys were going out and having like decent matches, and you know, the crowd did get up. I'm stumbling today. They did come up for some stuff on the show, and I think there was a "This Is Wrestling" chant at one point, which I loathe that so.
And you're making up for my typical rumbling, so that's okay.
dog that's going to the bathroom everywhere, so I'm kind of like flustered and all that. Anyway, go ahead.
I will say that the ropes, I didn't think it affected anything. And actually, in the sense of, or for the eight man, it actually made perfect sense. I mean, Tersus, I mean, the ring can't contain the guy, right? So he broke the middle rope. That's the perfect story to add to the match. But Quack and Eddie were so pissed live, like, that the rope broke again. Which, you know, and anybody that's working a match and the rope breaks or that's on the show would be. But I don't think ultimately that it took away from anything.
Now, you got to see Archibald Peck live twice, which I'm very jealous of, because he did not come through the Midwest when I got to go see Chikara. How is that live experience, especially now that he's got a bunny with him?
Well, Colt Cabana was certainly, if it wasn't for the bottom and middle rope in some cases, this was certainly the most overact of the weekend, which kind of surprised me because, you know, they come to Burlington for the second time, and then they're in Tennessee for the first time, and it's just like, I'm not sure I would expect them to be familiar with these things, and then they just, like, you know, they're so into every, like, Chikara act, so it, like, really surprised me. But yeah, I mean, Archibald Peck is, like, such a great act, and I mean, I got to see him at Ring of Honor under our Bannister R.D. Evans or whatever, and he took a sick chair shot from Homicide. Yeah, and I mean, pretty much since the first time I saw that guy, I've been sold on him, and you know, he's great. There's really, you know, and I mean, he's actually, as a worker, he improves, like, every time I see him as well. So that's a big credit.
Totally. And we'll get more into Chikara next week with our buddy Timothy Donst, who will be our guest.
Yes.
High Noon Eye pay-per-view. Just wanted to throw that out there. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because you were at this show. But I also wanted to bring up a show that you were recently at, where Davey Richards and the St. Louis Transported from British Columbia / Washington crew came down to Georgia, and I know there's a War Games match, and Davey, I think Davey wrestled Kyle Matthews, who had a nice little showing on the Dragon Gate North Carolina show.
Yeah,
so I wanted to go into that, and I had Larry Goodman's report up, and now it's gone. Awesome.
Oh my god, so. I cannot tell, and the both of you guys probably agree on this, I cannot tell you how cool it was to, like, read, like, a Larry Goodman review in 2011. Maybe most people listening might not even know what I'm talking about, but he used to do, like, the Wild Side reviews. And
I love Larry. Like, I've actually gotten to meet him a couple, because he came up from some IWA shows in 2004. And, like, I got to, like, help, like, hey, Tom, what's this move called? That's this. And I'm like, awesome, thank you. I got to see him, like, meticulously put together his review. And I'm, like, kind of marking out inside. Like, that's Larry Goodman report. Awesome.
I used to, like, print those things out and read them back in the day.
Oh, dude. And I think now he's, like, I know he's doing an OVW podcast, because I listened to that where the Ali dude was, like, really pissed at Meltzer about calling him, like, a fake Turk, like, a fake Arab. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever. But, yeah, let's talk about RPW. Like, because that seemed like a really fun show. And plus, we can give some exposure to some Georgia guys that people might not necessarily be talking about.
Absolutely. Oh, well, Kyle Matthews and Davey Richards, unfortunately, happened head-to-head with JPC. So, I don't know what the odds of that are. I mean, there's, like, three matches that ever happened in Georgia a year before this year there was never any, but it's weird because we've started to get all these, like, random, like, really good matches and, like, random appearances from, you know, decent indie names. So it was unfortunate. I don't so much regret like not seeing it just because it was in the Academy Theater, and I don't know if you've seen the Academy Theater, and that's not like to discredit the two guys. I'm sure they had a great match, but you can't do anything in the Academy Theater because the ring barely fits in the corner.
I was gonna say it's the building from the $5 Wrestling Live show, right? They can fit a ring in there.
They can.
That's insane. That's mind blowing.
Yeah. So you imagine they have a hard enough time having like tag matches just tag in and out because there's not any room, but let alone actually having, you know, like Kyle Matthews and Davey Richards standard type match that I would expect at least.
Like, and Goodman, it was worked from the Larry Goodman review because he made it sound like this Fed is like, I don't know, like the crowd like riffs on the show and it's like part of the show, and it sounded very weird and not Georgia indie like. I don't know.
Well, I'm not sure how anybody could rip on it when there's never anybody there. but Platinum Championship Wrestling, look, the first time I went to PCW was in September of last year, and they had their big show, Sacred Ground, and this was Chapter 1. They actually just did Chapter 2, and they brought in Joe and Cassandra and Magno, and they had Roderick Strong on the show. They were supposed to have Davey Richards on it, but he had to pull out, and it was like probably the worst wrestling experience I've ever had, just in terms of length. Like, it started an hour later. It was supposed to start at 7:30, then it was 8:30, and then they go to intermission at 11 with two matches left. Just inexcusable. And then the big kind of like stinker for PCW was the show they did WrestleMania weekend, the Thursday before at the Masquerade. For anybody who's been to Atlanta, I'm sure you're familiar with the Masquerade. It's actually a really fun venue to have wrestling in. And just, you know, some of the same guys that I was with at JPC were there this weekend, and they've been to indies all over North America. One of them's from Canada, and he just, it was far and away like the worst independent wrestling show that we've ever seen and he's ever seen. But actually the last time I went, they did a three-way which was in August with Chip Day, who I think is one of the better Atlanta guys, O'Reilly and Davey Richards. And it was like a 10-minute elimination sprint. And it was actually a really fun match. And it's too bad that they haven't like uploaded that to YouTube, and you'll never see it on DVD. So, I think they have like a highlight video though, but, PCW, like they expect a big crowd for when Davey Richards came in the last time in August. And I mean, the place sits what, like 65, 70 people. And there was like 20 there. And from what I can tell, I mean, everybody usually just takes the show for what it is and is trying to have a good time. So I don't know where that would come from.
Yeah.
Like, Mike, have you ever seen Chip Day? Because he's awesome.
I have seen him once before. So, and I have a DVD. I actually have an NWA Smoky Mountain DVD, believe it or not. I think it's they were in the same Tennessee building that you were at there, Ben.
Is it the one with
Chicago
Davey
show?
And Chase Owens?
Yeah, Davey and Chase Owens.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, I haven't seen that match. I'd really like to, but
yeah,
like there was a Carnage Cup a few years ago with that death matches were what they were, but there was a four way with like Slim J and Chip Day, and I think Christian Hayne might have been in there, and then Vincent Nothing, and I'm like, this is like an amazing four way scramble in the middle of a show that like that everyone's like ripping on. I'm like, it's a shame that like.
And so those unaware, Slim J does still exist.
Is he still doing MMA?
He does NWA Anarchy like every week.
You know what?
Essentially Wild Type.
Yeah, speaking of random DVDs Mike has, I also have a NWA Anarchy DVD that like I think like the only 2011 DVD that they have on their website. I actually have. I think it's Slim J versus somebody managed by Jeff G. Bailey in a barbed wire match, believe it or not. So not only is Slim J still around, but he's doing death matches, so that has to be something to see. So
yeah, I can't say that I'm too familiar with the Anarchy product at this point, which is probably unfortunate because it's not that far of a drive for me. I mean, it's like an hour and a half, which for a lot of people is too far.
Cornelia,
Cornelia, and it's still Cornelia, in the same
Georgia.
Building.
So. Yeah, same. Oh, that's cool though. I'm glad they still run the same building, same video quality too. Believe me. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, they
still
have the same.
ROH.
Yeah, exactly. and maybe their DVD graphics are just maybe a little bit better too. But no, like they're like computer graphics that Anarchy has. I'm telling you, it's the same graphics that they probably use like on their TV show on America One in 2000 with K Crush versus K Quick versus K Crush versus AJ Styles. That's right. I got it right the first time. Kid Crush.
I remember they upgraded once in like 2002. Because I remember it went from like, yeah, I remember it went from like the 1970s looking Chiron to like something you see in like 95. And then it just never updated from there.
Yeah. But no, in another event, while we had, I guess the theme of the show is shows that Ben was at that were good. Some of them that were good anyway, but you were at the TNA tapings, and we don't talk about TNA too much on this show, even though we've been shockingly talked about it the past two shows, being that I was at Bound for Glory. But no, you were at the, you were at what I basically thought I was going to see in Philadelphia, and that was Robert Roode win the title. Spoiler alert to nobody. But I guess how were those shows? And you know, obviously, I'm actually going to watch them. I want to see what they're all about because I'm intrigued by the whole thing, and I guess what your brief life thoughts on the Impact tapings that I guess will play out the next couple weeks.
And we should still talk about RPW because I have a lot to say.
Yeah, definitely.
TNA, it was TNA. There's really no other explanation. I mean, if you've seen TNA on TV or if you've been to a TNA Impact taping, it was probably the most miserable time of your life. I would say, actually, the first taping was pretty good, and Roode and Storm were having a really good match, and then, of course, you know, TNA happens, and they have a TV finish. And what I'll say about, I hate TV tapings. I hate going to them because they're too long, and the breaks in between were just excruciating. I mean, it's like segment, Jeremy Borash, match, Jeremy Borash, segment, Jeremy Borash, and it's like 5 to 10 minutes in between every segment, and it's just... You know, it's rough for me to sit through, especially through a product where, you know, and I was actually excited because I knew Shima was going to be there. And then he gets squashed by, you know, Jesse Sorensen. And, you know, they do this Destination X, these qualifiers, and they bring in all these really good, you know, really good guys, you know, and they signed, what, Tony Nese and Shima and Aries and I guess Kid Cash as well, which he was involved here and Aries was involved in well. But it's like of all the guys that were in there, you're going to push the greenest and the least experienced Jesse Sorensen.
And it's nothing against Jesse Sorensen. Like I like Jesse Sorensen, but like of all the guys that should be getting the push, he's like the last person that should be getting. Like I forgot Tony Nese is even in TNA. You know what I mean? Like well, was he even
there? One taping after he got signed. That was it. Yeah. I think.
What a shame, man.
Even he questions if he's still in the company, which is unfortunate. But yeah, so I mean, he just squashed Shima in like 2.5 minutes, and it's like they flew in Shima to do that, you know. Yeah. And I guess they're gonna do a three-way with Aries, Kid Cash, and Sorn, which should be good at least. And then the only other thing I'll say about TNA is they came back with the rematch, which will air in the week before, or I guess a few days before the pay-per-view. So they do the Robert Roode, you know, he's like busted open backstage. So, you know, he gives a valiant effort, but he loses. And then AJ Styles, for no other reason, comes out and asks for a match. And like 5 seconds before the show goes off the air, they have their main event for the pay-per-view in 3 days. But that's TNA, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, also, there
that's kind of, TNA.
Yeah, that's TNA. I wanted to bring up Kyle Matthews' match from that show as well, because then Jimmy Rave opened the show.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was Kyle Matthews versus Jimmy Rave, which means it was better than anything on the show. But, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty basic match just in terms of quality. But like I told them, it was, you know, I mean, it kind of got me to go, you know, just to support them more than anything else.
I could see that. But, no, you wanted to bring up RPW, though. So I guess while we were talking about, we kind of sidetracked to TNA there. If you wanted to go back and talk about RPW, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was just a really unique show. I mean, based on, like, O'Reilly and Richards for the first time, at least, on a show. I mean, I'm sure they've sparred plenty of times in the gym, and they'll certainly tell you that on Twitter. Yeah, I mean, I guess the best way to describe it, because, like, I really know better than to have, like, big expectations for this when it's going to be in front of, you know, 75 people. And that's something I probably should mention, is this was a big show for them. You know, they were doing War Games. And they had, like, seats. I mean, it probably only seats 150 at most. And they had, like, more seats there than the last time I was there, and they didn't fill as many as the previous time. And that's with War Games and O'Reilly and Richards. And the crowd was just, like, really not into anything. But it's still, like, a fun place to go to. It's actually at, like, a Chuck E. Cheese, like a bigger Chuck E. Cheese. It's called Johnny G's Fun Center. And it's, like, down in the corner. So there's a lot of kids there. but the creatures were out in droves for this show. And I've been to three RPW shows. And I think what really hurt them, and I'm sure they have a reason for doing it, was they changed from running Saturday nights to Sunday afternoons, and that's just, like, hurt it tremendously. But, yeah, I mean, I guess the best way to describe O'Reilly and Richards is they didn't really have, like, it wasn't a very progressive match, and Kyle actually put it to me that way, and that's the best way to describe it. They just kind of went in there for 15 minutes and, like, did stuff, you know, and pretty much sparred, I guess would be the best way to describe it. It was still a good match. Actually, the highlight of the show was Tony Cozzina playing a bitter veteran character, tripping over the ropes, you know, beating down the youngster, and then getting rolled up or getting beat. And then War Games was really good. It was Team Kyle Matthews, Team Jimmy Rave, and some of the guys in this match, a couple of them I've actually never seen, but like J-Rod I think is very good. I think he's been in the business for a while. I've never seen him around, but he seems pretty experienced. You have Chip Day, we talked about him. Sean Tempers is actually a really good guy. And he works, I think, like up into like Tennessee and the Carolinas a little more maybe than some of these guys do. And then actually a guy that's not in the was not in the War Games, but Sean Banks. I'm actually a big supporter of his and Crew Jones. They make up Hot Like Lava, which you probably are familiar with them. And I think Crew Jones actually did an IW Mid-South show at one point, but I could be wrong.
He did he moved to Chicago at one
right.
point.
Okay. Yeah. So he's been back down here for a while. All I remember is they did like Crew Jones against like Joe Legend on a show.
That was
December of 2003, I think.
Yeah, and then I remember he wrestled BJ Whitmer, and then they did like a four-way the first month I went to Highland. It was like Crew Jones and Emil Satochi and like I think Frankie the Face.
I think that was like my first exposure to IWM Mattel too, was that December 2003 show.
Which was a star-studded show in front of 125 people. But
what was in Highland?
Yeah. The myth about Highland that I guess I've helped perpetuate is that like they drew massive amounts of people when in reality it was massive amounts for IWA, because that building couldn't hold more than like 300. It was a very, 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 very small room. It just, they drew more than the 80 that they would draw in, let's say, Lafayette. And that's a very handsome estimate, let's just say.
Yeah, the legend of Highland, Indiana, which it has now become.
Yes.
At least for those of us that constantly have our IWM Mid-South DVDs on hand.
Yes, and the thing is, there's still interesting shows to look back on. I mean, I've watched, what show did I watch the other day? It might have been some of the best six with the Flippy tournament with, like, Jigsaw against M-Dog, and it was, like, the last Highland show. But yeah, there. Go ahead.
It's funny. I watched a show about 3 months ago. It was the last DVD I threw in, and it was from. It was like December of 06, and it was Jigsaw and Brian Danielson. And
yeah, December match, 05. Like, show.
I had never seen it, and that's what I love about IWM Mid-South is like they ran so many shows in that period that like I actually own all the shows, but like I never watched them for whatever reason, so I just throw them in, and it's like Jigsaw versus Brian Danielson. This is awesome. I didn't even know this existed.
I was gonna say like, and they were attended by like 30 people, so no one even talks about them. You know what I mean? It's like these like last shows. So
that show was attended by like 50, and the building could have probably, if they really, really someday wanted to fill it up, it could have held more than maybe any building Ian was running at the time easily. It was a gigantic like volleyball gym, and like there were 50 people there. I think I know Hallow Wicked, I believe, was there. Larry Sweeney was there. The main event was Necro and Toby against the Brain Damage and Derange. I was trying to remember their name, but it was like No Rope Barbed Wire. I just remember there being like crazy women in the crowd that I think one of them like dated Brain Damage and the other one was like a crazy stalker chick, but like they were going nuts for everything Brain Damage related.
What was the city?
Plainfield.
Plainfield, yes.
Yeah, which... That building was bad news in general just because it was so freaking big that even if Ian ever drew for real in that building, it would still look terrible because they only ever set up seats in like the first half of the building. Not even the first half, the first quarter, because the building was split in half by like a wall, and they would legitimately be doing like junior volleyball practices on the other side of the wall during shows. So you would see like little kids coming through with their volleyball equipment and their little cleats on or whatever volleyball shoes are called, while like Deranged is slicing open Toby Klein's head with barbed wire. It was fantastic. That building. And that was the building that did the dodgeball match in. It was volleyball. Yeah.
The volleyball match. It was
an eight man because like there were a ton of guys that had worked Insanity Pro that night that were coming over, and Ian just like had to switch up the show in the middle of it. So he just threw all the Insanity Pro guys into like an eight way. And they're like, screw it, we're gonna just play a game of volleyball. And it was something to see, like Detox. That's a name that nobody remembers. Out there serving to Billy Rock and Christian Haim passing, and it was something.
How did Billy Rock do, by the way, on the Dragon Gate show?
He did very well. Actually, I was watching a IPW DVD from like a couple weeks before. Him and Ricochet tore it up. Like, I really want people to watch that because it's the best Billy Rock match I've seen in a couple of years. But no, the Dragon Gate match, he did really well as my dog squeaks a toy into my ear, practically. He got in quite a bit. Him and Sugar looked really good together. They got to work some sequences together. Didn't necessarily care for the booking of the whole deal where, you know, Brody takes out five guys and makes them look like geeks, and then they all attack them and look like look like they're ganging up on them when they're supposed to be the good guys or whatever. But it was good, and I think it's supposed to be up on WWE and Live within the next 2 weeks. So
I was gonna say, I hope I can at least get it on DVD by WrestleMania next year, but I'm not holding.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, the one thing about that building on video that I've mentioned on Twitter is it's so damn white. Like, it is the whitest building in the world. And Dragon Gate will actually white balance their cameras correctly, so it'll look as white as humanly possible. I've literally gotten headaches in that building before. And I mean, the show's really good. I'm not insulting IPW. It's the best building they can get in Indianapolis for a decent price. I'm just saying, be prepared to like get up away from your screen every couple matches and just like look at something else for 5 minutes.
I actually have the show they did with the big like 10-man tag or 8-man tag on standby. Like, I got it in the Smart Mark video cell they just did.
The
Reign of the Insane.
Yes, that's the one I was referencing with Billy and Ricochet, which Billy does a lot of the British style stuff, but he often works with the guys that like can't really work it with them. But Ricochet, of all people, who does not do that style, was able to hang with them. Like step by step, and it was really cool. Really cool match. Really good show in general. It's just you'll probably just have to watch it in like pieces because it is like 9 hours long. Mm-hmm. But the opener, which I want to shout out, for six guys who were doing their first main show ever, with the exception of Tripp and I think Bentley. But for six guys who are at a very low level of in-ring experience, they tore it up. I'm talking about my guys, the School Rock guys, the Remy Wilkins, the Sue Jacksons, and then a couple of guys that work for a Lucha Fed in Chicago. Matt Nixon Overload, the one-up playa with an A, because he's a playa. I don't know. I don't know these things. These kids with these masks and these moves, they just need to get off my damn lawn.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we're closing in on about an hour, which is about a comfortable length for
us. That's like where we're at. Yep.
Yeah. So Ben, once again, if you want to go ahead and let the people know about free admission for real, freeadmissionfr.com. Platform's yours.
Freeadmissionfr.com. We pretty much try to see the appeal of our, at least when we do podcasts, you know, around live events that we attend, you know, indie events. And like I said, we've been to like Shikara, King of Trios, New Japan when they were here, WrestleMania weekend were there, you know, random stuff all over the East Coast and into the Midwest and West Coast, you know, it's all over the place. So, and we try to get, you know, people that are attended certain events, and we're going to try to start doing more audio. But it's kind of tough sometimes. And I just want to give a shout out to really Jacob, Mark, JP, and actually another Mark, POD Johnny Ringo. As most of you will probably know him as, they've all, you know, contributed to the site, and I really appreciate it. And, so freeadmissionfr.com.
They're all good men.
Twitter @freeadmissionfr.
Definitely.
So yeah, with that, I think we're going to close up once again. Like I mentioned a few minutes ago, Tim Donst will be on the show next week. He's got a big match coming up at High Noon, the first Chikara pay-per-view. We'll get into all that next week. But
and the Cibernetico.
And the Cibernetico, where he is captaining. Because he is the man, not you, Hollow Wicked, darn it. There's even a song and everything. But with that, we're going to head out. I want to thank you very much, Ben, for literally doing the show at an airport on the way through Las Vegas. That is dedication, my friend. And for that, you are more of a man than I will ever be.
Yeah, have a good time there, buddy.
And I don't have the help of Cheech on this particular show to hold me up, so.
Yeah, right? Yeah, definitely. And come back on again. We love to have you on. You were awesome the last time. You're awesome tonight. So we love to have you on again. And and thank you there, Tom. So I guess we're wrapping this show.
Yeah, for you and for me and for Ben and for all of us and for my wife and for my dog who are listening in, I want to thank you all very much for listening. We will be back next week. Have an amazing rest of the week.
Bye.